Assistant City Attorney for Milwaukee, Stewart, and how do you pronounce your name?
Your Honor, it's pronounced Muckamal, same way as it's spelled.
I would have pronounced it Muckamal, same way as it's spelled.
Actually, there are one or two members of my family that use that one.
Wise, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Muckamal, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and may it please the Court. I am Stewart S. Muckamal, Assistant City Attorney for the City of Milwaukee, representing the Board of Zoning Appeals in this very important matter. And I want to express my appreciation to the Court for this opportunity, which is the first time that I've had the honor of appearing before this Court. This is a very important matter, both of legal significance as to how certiorari review of zoning decisions and determinations is conducted, and of great practical import, which impacts upon every Board of Zoning Appeals and, as it happens, every county zoning board of adjustment throughout this state. The issue in this case is whether a reviewing court on certiorari review may require a Board of Zoning Appeals to issue an explicitly reasoned written decision when deciding a variance, special use, or other similar matter within its jurisdiction, in this case, a dimensional variance case. And in this case where, number one, the applicable statute does not require such a determination or, in fact, a written determination at all, and two, where the record, including the hearing transcript of the hearing before the Milwaukee Board of Zoning Appeals, contained ample discussion as to the views of the controlling members of the Board of Zoning Appeals on the matter at hand, including their rationale.
Counsel, since you raised that, and I did read it, talking about the transcript, can you point to a place in the transcript if there's any discussion about the testimony, about the exhibits, about the pictures? I mean, I'm just at, do you have the transcript there?
I have the transcript. It was an appendix to my brief.
Yes.
The discussion, and I'm talking now about the debate between members Winkler, Zemanski, and Zetley.
Right.
Did not refer to specific evidence. It did refer to the import of the evidence and as to the variance standards that the former Milwaukee Zoning Code, and I say former because the code was recodified after these hearings were completed, as to which variance standards had not been satisfied by the applicant in this case, Lamar Outdoor. In particular,
Talk about hardship. Just pick one of them, hardship or economic. What just
it talked about two in particular. One was hardship, in particular the economic grounds prong of the hardship test, which is in the Milwaukee Zoning Code. And it also, especially Chairman Zetley's discussion, discussed the preservation of intent prong. Member Zemanski's discussion also addressed it, and in particular, the fact that in their view, the purpose of the sign portion of the zoning code, which addressed enhancement of the overall appearance of the city, would not be served by grant of this particular dimensional variance. Both of them referred to it in different ways, including Chairman Zetlin, who said, we don't want to make signs bigger and bigger. And that's a reference to that prong. There was no factual dispute.
What I just wanted to ask, sir, as far as the evidence that was given, in other words, as I understand this, the sign company testified, a representative said why they wanted it. But I mean, as far as just an explanation as to the hardship, you're saying there's an inference, in other words, a reference. But I don't see, and maybe I missed it, and that's why I was asking, just what language the Court of Appeals or the Circuit Court, particularly here, the Court of Appeals would be looking at to make their decision. They look at the whole record, but where in the record is there any language?
Well, in the discussion, the interplay between the members, the debate was whether this truly made out a case of hardship or whether it was just a case of revenue maximization. Obviously, when Lamar's sought to obtain a variance to raise the height of its billboard, it did so based upon what anyone would call a sound business plan. A higher billboard, one with greater visibility, is going to produce more revenue. The question was whether that satisfied the hardship test. And Chairman Zetney and Member Zemanski clearly indicated in their view that it did not. And that...
I was trying to get you to point to some. I'm going to point to page
12 and 13 or something.
Of the appendix. And it says, this is Mr. Zemanski saying, again, I'm not a sign aficionado. And then he says, as far as the hardship, and I think that hardship also has not been met because it is intended to wind up generating some additional revenue for this facility.
That's correct. In other words, he saw it as a revenue maximization issue and not truly hardship. And Member Zetley, or Chairman Zetley, indicated to the same effect. Now, if the issue is whether they were right or wrong, that's an issue that could have been resolved on traditional certiorari grounds. And it was not. The point being that such discussion need not be contained in the written determination itself. It was in the record. It was in the debate. And under the method by which certiorari review is conducted throughout the state, that's sufficient, particularly in the zoning context.
Well, counsel, let me just see if I can get the question phrased properly. In my mind, you said that it need not, to quote what you just said, it need not be set forth in the opinion if it's in the record. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. In fact, they need not even issue a written opinion at all.
Okay. Now, you started, though, with saying what was the issue here. And the issue, you said, something like, may the Court of Appeals require the Board of Zoning to issue an explicitly written discussion. Again, I don't have you verbatim, but may the court require is verbatim. That's a little bit different. It seems to me. Why can't a court require, why can't a court say, hey, on this record, or rather, on what you've given me, you know, these findings and stuff, we can't exercise meaningful judicial review, so we're going to remand it and have you do some, add to it. Why can't a court do that?
Because of two factors. First, how certiorari review should be conducted in zoning cases, and second, the statute. 62.237E9, which, by the way, has a counterpart for county boards of zoning adjustments, 59.694 sub 7, 8, and 9. In the case of city or municipal boards of zoning appeals, all that's required is the grounds for a determination to be stated, not stated in writing, just stated. And in the case of county boards of zoning adjustments, there's no requirement of a written determination at all, with one exception pertaining to renewable energy systems.
I'll tell you what made me start thinking this way, the difference between your require and, you know, must it include. One is, the way you rephrase the question, can a court require, is I went to look at the bench book, our judicial bench book on zoning, and got to the scope of review of, and found this case, State versus Trudeau, written by Justice Steinmetz. And in the judicial bench book, it says, a court may remand to the board to make appropriate findings so as to enable meaningful judicial review. And it cites State versus Trudeau, a 1987 case. And I took a look at that, kind of a summary look at that. But indeed, that seems to me that's exactly what the court did there, remanded because to make some specific findings and to give meaningful review. Justice Steinmetz said, we remand, I'm reading from page 110 of that case, we remand the case to the circuit court with directions to remand the matter to the Board of Adjustment for findings concerning, this dealt with Lake Superior and the high water mark, etc. The board must make appropriate findings supporting its conclusions so a meaningful judicial review is possible.
The board is required to include findings on public interest, special conditions, and unnecessary hardship, as well as any of the relevant 8 factors set out in 7.34 of the Ashland County Floodplain Zoning Ordinance.
I would submit that such a result would be inconsistent with 6223.7E9, which states that you only have to state the grounds for a determination. Now, you might ask, well, could you imply a requirement that those findings or grounds be stated in writing? And my response would be no, because where the legislature has seen fit to require a written decision, it has done so. For example, in the cases that were cited in Mr. Whitcomb's brief, we see a number of cases in which Chapter 227, and in particular 227.37, was applicable. You would see cases involving boards of fire and police commissioners where Section 62.135F or 62.50(17) were applicable. You've seen some cases involving annuity and pension boards where provisions of the Milwaukee City Charter are applicable, all of which required written findings. There's no such requirement here. By the way, if you'd indulge me for just a moment, I would like to correct a citation error in my reply brief. On page 9 of my reply brief, involving my discussion of the case Transport Oil Company v. Cummings, a 1972 unemployment compensation case, I made the assertion that written findings of an unemployment compensation appeal tribunal were required, but I cited the wrong source for that. I cited Chapter 227, and that's in error. The requirement does apply, but that's not the source. The source is Section 108.09(6), which refers to the Unemployment Compensation Administrative Code, and that code contains a written findings and conclusions requirement, almost word for word identical to that in 227. And I would cite in particular the then applicable Wisconsin Administrative Code, IND-UC, Section 140.05(8). And there's a modern counterpart as well. So the result was correct, but I gave the wrong citation. I wanted to correct that.
Also,
Yes, Justice.
Kind of follow up on Justice Bradley's. I think that, and I would agree with you, that basically that the board is required, maybe I should say all the board is required to do, is to develop a record that's sufficient enough to inform the parties of the basis of the decision. But in Zerbogel, which is a case came out last year, this court did require that there would be a balancing. This is in a variance case, a balancing dealing with unnecessary hardship, a balancing of the interests. And that's what I was kind of looking for in this record, where they considered the hardship, and that's what I didn't find. And I wanted you to point to that.
I can actually explain it in a different manner. This case was decided by the board when the Kenosha County standard applied, the no reasonable use standard. It was decided on March 27, 2001, which was approximately 3 months prior to this court's decision in Outagamie County. In other words, Kenosha County hadn't even been questioned as of that time, and therefore the no reasonable use standard applied. And if you note the comments of members of Mansky and Chairman Zetley, you will notice references to that standard. We think there's another use for this land, and in fact there was.
What I'm saying is that they used the wrong standard. They used the right standard then, but it's the wrong standard now.
It would be the erroneous standard now, but that's a different question than the one that has brought us here today. If, for example, the court were to remand this matter to the board for a determination of this case according to the new Zierwege-Washara County standard on dimensional and area variances, that wouldn't answer the question that brought us here today, which is, does it have to be in a written form? Do you have to have an explicitly reasoned written decision? And especially under circumstances where a minority of the board controlled by operation of law. So you raise a very good question, Justice Wilcox, but it's a question that even if we dealt with it, would not solve the problem that brought us here.
Counselor, as I look at 6223, subsection 9. It just says the board shall state its reasons, okay, for denying the variance. It doesn't say it has to be in writing. It doesn't say it doesn't have to be in writing, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And I understand the writing part is something that gives you concern. But from what I have read in the record as attached to your brief, and some parts of which Justice Wilcox has been trying to read, although I can see discussions of issues, I do not see a board member saying, I am going to vote against this because of A, B, and C. To me, that would be stating the reasons. And I guess that's what's kind of left out for me. Can you help me with that? Am I missing something?
Certainly. I believe that Member Zemanski and Chairman Zetli did discuss their reasoning based on not only the lacking element in the hardship test, and that is whether this was solely or not solely based on economic grounds, but also on preservation of intent, as I've discussed. However, even if that weren't the case, even if the discussion was insufficient, the remedy chosen by the Court of Appeals is erroneous. What the Court of Appeals should then have stated is either they proceeded on the incorrect theory of law, or that the decision was arbitrary and capricious and represented their will and not their judgment, or that there was insufficient evidence in the record to support the decision. In other words, prongs 2, 3, and 4 of traditional certiorari review. That would have been, we would disagree with it, but that would have been a proper resolution in terms of the jurisdiction and authority of the Court of Appeals. But to send it back for a written determination of greater detail, an explicitly reasoned one, is a particular form of remedy that we respectfully believe was beyond the authority of the Court of Appeals to order. And
I believe it's beyond the authority of the Court of Appeals because the statute doesn't say a written decision. But why can't the Court of Appeals say a written decision? The statute doesn't say an oral decision. It doesn't say a decision that's simply on the record.
Well, it's partly that. It's also partly because of the established method of certiorari review, which states that the Court of Appeals must review the record and not just the written determination, and if there's substantial evidence in the record to support the board's decision, it must be upheld. But in contrast to the many other state statutes that direct written decisions in other contexts, and I cited some, I'll cite one or two others, in criminal competency proceedings under 971.14, written findings are required. I believe in petitions for incorporation of villages or annexation to villages or towns, it's one of those. It's in the early provisions of Chapter 66, and I can get the citation quickly if needed. Written findings are required. The legislature has shown no hesitation whatsoever to say when they want a written decision. Here they didn't.
Well, let me ask this, Mr. Muckmull, because I think I understand the concern here. Your point is we shouldn't send it back for written decision. My question would be, what should the Court of Appeals do when on the one hand they're assuming, looking at the minority board members here who voted, one of them, in addition to giving a reason why there should not be a variance, says existing signage, I would hope, would further be diminished. Again, I'm not a sign aficionado, as Justice Wilcox pointed out. And the chairman says, but it's a third objection by the chair, in that just making the signs bigger and bigger isn't something that this chair is in favor of, but that's just my third position on it. So that what you have on the one hand is you have some arguments that could be made that, yeah, there are legitimate reasons here, but there's also an argument that could be made that they're really exercising will and not judgment. How does the court tell which it is unless it sends it back?
Well, what I would suggest is, again, if the Court of Appeals disagreed with the reasoning of the controlling minority of the board or felt that it was arbitrary and represented will but not judgment, it should have simply reversed on traditional certiorari grounds. That's why the grounds were drafted as they were.
But I think the problem here is how do you tell whether it was an exercise of will or whether or not the board actually exercised appropriate reasons, given this fact set. Now, I think that's what's a little quirky about this case, is that you've got different reasons. One kind of goes to arbitrariness, and the other goes towards legitimate reasons. How does the reviewing court tell what the board relied upon, particularly when we're looking at the minority?
Well, first, you raise a very interesting point that I'll get to in a moment. But first, I myself thought that the basis upon which the two controlling minority members of the board acted were quite clear, that this was, in fact, a case of economic advantage, not a case of hardship. Secondly, that the...
That was the legitimate reason.
And actually, that's enough. If there's one legitimate reason in this particular kind of certiorari context, the decision stands, even if the other reasons are illegitimate. The other point being that if they disagreed, if they didn't think there was any legitimate reason, if, for example, they believed that, no, this is a case of hardship, as Member Winkler believed, I'm referring now to any reviewing court, or if they thought that aesthetics was not a sufficient grounds for denying a height variance for this billboard, in spite of the zoning code's provision that said the appearance of the city should be enhanced by the operation of this ordinance, they should have just sent it back as a traditional certiorari reversal. They just should have said, decision reversed, it's remanded to the board, and we direct that this variance be granted because you haven't articulated proper reasons. As I said, we might have disagreed with that, but we wouldn't be here on the question that we're here on today, which really is something quite different. It's the imposition of an additional unwarranted requirement in order to pass certiorari muster, and that is one of an explicitly reasoned written decision.
If I hear you correctly, then what you would like us to do is to say we see some reasons which could arguably be adequate, some reasons which arguably are not adequate, and because we can't tell what was controlling, we reverse it, say it was your will and not your judgment, and that's it. You'd rather have that result.
Well, you could. I mean, we'd rather have the decision affirmed, obviously. This is a decision of the circuit court on the grounds that there were sufficient reasonable grounds upon which the board, or at least the controlling minority of the board, ruled. Justice Butler brought up a very interesting point, though, and that is what happens if you have a controlling minority but they disagree on the reasoning, or they use different reasons. The League's amicus brief raised this point, and that's an extreme difficulty that's engendered by the Court of Appeals decision. How do you draft an explicitly reasoned written decision if you don't have an explicit set of reasons, or if you have reasons that differ from member to member to member? That's an impossible burden under this particular context, let alone the fact of requiring not only this zoning board but every other zoning board throughout the state to issue an explicitly reasoned written decision in every case that they hear.
Well, Counselor, maybe we'd have to say if the members can't agree and it's only the minority that controlled, then therefore the variance is granted because there wasn't an adequate denial that was consistent with the minority of the board they controls.
Again, the merits of this case are not before the board at this point, or on the court at this point. I'm sure the court could reach it if they so chose, but that's not the question that's been presented for review. The question presented is what's needed in terms of a decision or a form of decision in order to pass certiorari muster or to enable a reviewing court to conduct certiorari review. In other words, what we're saying is that the court... Yes, Justice.
No, I was going to say, I agree with you that very little is required, but that's the difficulty that when I read the transcript, and I think it's been recited here almost in its entirety by various members of the court, but it is difficult to find... I mean, you have to... sort of interpret what they were talking about. And I think, if nothing more, the board was simply saying we need more than that. And when you indicate to me what the various members said, they only had conclusory statements. That's the difficulty that I, at least I see in this. They came to a conclusion without stating the reasons.
And I understand the difficulty. And what I'm suggesting is that the Court of Appeals had better methods of dealing with it. One would be the utilization of traditional certiorari review. The other, which they did not direct, would be to direct the taking of additional evidence. I'm not sure that that would have been appropriate because we did have a complete record in this case. But the taking of additional evidence by a reviewing court is sanctioned by 6223.7E9. But the direction of a written decision, let alone an explicitly reasoned one, is not. And that's our difficulty.
Mr. Muckaball, I want to go back to something you said earlier and see if I understand your position. As I understood what you answered, I think it was to Justice Wilcox several minutes ago, it was basically that we shouldn't consider cases like Outagamie County, Zervogel, Washera County in looking at whether or not this decision was sufficient. Is that indeed your position?
No, you could consider them. The problem is that it wouldn't solve the problem that brought us here. What I stated was that since Zervogel, Outagamie County, I'm not sure because you had that issue of whether the plurality opinion controlled, but certainly Zervogel and Washera County changed the standard for dimensional variances from the one that was utilized by this board because this board utilized a standard that was proper at the time but has since been modified. And this court certainly would have the authority to direct a reconsideration of this case according to the new standards, but that's not the same as directing an explicitly written, reasoned written decision. That's something entirely different. Our quarrel is with the form of remedy that the Court of Appeals directed, and not with whether the board is right or wrong. That's not really the case before us today. Thank you.
Could I ask one question? Sure. You have about a 13-page transcript here.
That's correct.
And you have a 3-page order, or a 3-page document.
A 3-page written determination, yes.
Right. Suppose you had nothing more than the 3-page determination. Would that be enough in your view?
The problem you might have there is that you wouldn't have really a record at all. You do have a transcript here, and the transcript is utilized in every case in which the Milwaukee Board of Zoning Appeals meets. I believe that is the practice in most boards of zoning appeals, or at least in many of them. In order to pass certiorari muster, you have to have evidence in the record, whatever that record might be. I would believe that if you took the transcript out of this case, you still have a record. I think it would be a more difficult proposition because you wouldn't have any clue as to the reasoning of the controlling minority of the board. But you do have a record, and you do have a debate, and this case has to be evaluated in light of that. Obviously, the requirement of evidence on the record being a traditional prong of certiorari review, in fact, maybe the most fundamental prong, has a purpose. And the purpose is that there at least be something to review. And I think it's correct that there should be something to review. What I suggest is that in this case, there was more than sufficient evidence to review and more than sufficient discussion to review, albeit not in the form that the Court of Appeals would have preferred. And I'm sure that every Board of Zoning Appeals and Board of Zoning Adjustment adopts their own practice as to how to compile a record and how to present a decision in such fashion as to withstand certiorari review. There are some cases, one that was cited in both of our briefs, Old Tuckaway, for example, where there was no written decision at all, just a roll call vote and an affirmation by the Board of Zoning Appeals, and that withstood certiorari review by the very same Court of Appeals that got us here today. So there are many routes to the result you suggest, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Whitcomb? Michael A. Whitcomb, representing Lamar Central Outdoor, Inc.
Chief Justice, members of the court, my name is Michael Whitcomb, and I represent Lamar Central Outdoor in this matter. I understand that the order, the summary order of the Court of Appeals, is subject to interpretation, and I don't necessarily fault the Board of Zoning Appeals' interpretation, but nowhere contained in that order is there a requirement that a written decision be made. This case is not a case about formalities. This case is a case about the exercise of discretion and the requirement that it be exercised by a Board of Zoning Appeals or a Board of Adjustment. To adopt the position of the Board of Zoning Appeals, this court would be creating a new standard of review. That standard of review is one akin to review of discretionary decisions by trial courts where discretion is not revealed in the record. Basically, what the Board of Zoning Appeals is requesting this court to do is to say that a reviewing court, whether it be a circuit court or a court of appeals, where there isn't discretion revealed in the record, the exercise of discretion revealed in the record, the reviewing court may conduct its own de novo review, and in this case, it would be the de novo review of the application of Lamar for its variance. Nowhere is that provided for in the law. If such is the standard to be adopted by this court at this time, I believe that the inescapable conclusion is that Lamar is entitled to the variance it requested based upon the evidence that was presented. The arguments related to the economic impact of raising the billboard is not contained in the record. There is no factual evidence or testimony in that regard. It was a supposition of the members of the Board of Zoning Appeals, two in particular. This burden expressed by the Wisconsin League of Municipalities and advanced here again today by the Board of Zoning Appeals that the requirement of the Court of Appeals to have the Board of Zoning Appeals merely explain its reasoning would be onerous, reads far more into the decision than it actually states. All the court asked the board to do is to articulate give explicitly the reasons for its decision. It didn't say in writing.
Does it have to be in writing?
No. I mean, the record reflects, and I respectfully submit, that the three members of the board who supported the variance were able to articulate the reasons for supporting it. Board member Winkler was quite articulate in doing so. He's a lawyer member of the board. He addressed and focused on the question of hardship. The hardship is not self-imposed. If the law is that if discretion is exercised by the Board of Zoning Appeals, its reasons are explained for its decision, then a court, a reviewing court, if necessary, may look to the record for evidence to support that reasoning. In this particular case, I agree with the Court of Appeals that that reasoning does not appear in the record. All that appears in the record is a mere recitation of the enumerated criteria contained in the Milwaukee Code of Ordinances and the rule that, and the vote of two of the members, that they do not meet the criteria. They summarily denied the application without explaining its reasons for doing so.
Mr. Whitcomb, if I could, Section 62.23, 7E9, requires the concurring vote of four members of the board shall be necessary to effect any variation in such ordinance. The grounds of every such determination shall be stated. I guess my question is this. Why couldn't the board, since we have a 3-2 vote, four votes are required to effectuate the variance. Why couldn't the board effectuate a decision that says that because we cannot come to, or at least have agreement among four members to approve this variance, that is the reason for the denial? Wouldn't that be legally sufficient?
Due to the lack of agreement between the board members, I do not believe so. I don't believe that they would meet the standard of properly applying the law. I do not believe that they would be fulfilling their responsibilities, and I believe it would be an escape hatch that some boards may use on a regular basis to avoid the political ramifications of the decision by saying we can't decide so you don't get your variance. I think that what would transpire if it was challenged to a circuit court, that according to statute, the circuit court would send it back to the board, direct that more evidence be taken in order to assist the board in making a decision 4-1 or unanimously. Now, I do not believe that would be in compliance with the requirements of boards of zoning appeals. They are there to make decisions. They are there to decide up or down on a particular matter that comes before them.
What am I missing here? In the statute cited by Justice Butler, it says, as he quoted, the ground of every such determination shall be stated. Okay. And you said it doesn't have to be in writing. But I look at that portion of the transcript that is appended to the city's brief, and my read of it is that there are two members that don't approve the request because it doesn't meet the hardship criteria. Specifically, the criteria says it can't be based solely on economic criteria, and that's why it doesn't meet the hardship criteria, because the sign is a matter of revenue. Now, I am paraphrasing what Chairman Zatley said, and then the other board member, I think it's Szymanski, essentially said the same thing. So isn't that a statement of the ground of the determination?
No, Your Honor.
Tell me why it isn't.
Grounds, I believe, I mean, this is a old statute. It was, old in the sense, it's about probably 7 years old. It's a language that is national, created in the 1920s. Ground means facts. I think, and the statement by Zetley, Chairman Zetley, and by Szymanski, that was not based upon facts. None of those facts appeared in the record. I think that is what caused the Court of Appeals concern. Where in the record, where is your reasoning, where is the facts, where is the evidence that supports that conclusion? Where is the reasoning from the facts to the conclusion?
Where do you get the answer that grounds equals facts? Where do you get that citation for authority? To me, grounds could be, what's the basis for the decision? What's the grounds for the decision? Yeah, what's the rationale? The rationale of the decision is you have to have undue hardship, or whatever it is, and that in order to meet that, it cannot be brought, the test is, it can't be, you know, self-imposed, and it can't be just economic basis, and you've got two guys here, I don't mean to sound disrespectful, two board members who say that it is based on, there's no hardship because this is purely economic. That's the ground. Unless you can show me that ground means testified to facts, as you are asserting. Maybe it does, but you got to show me authority for that. Otherwise, I'll use what my vernacular says a ground can be.
Can I help follow up this question? Was there anything in the transcript on the economics of these signs?
Everything that transpired before the board is in.
Yeah.
Is
but
in
I'm just account. Asking.
Nothing.
That.
But there's no evidence, statement, question, indicating that raising the height of the billboard would economically affect the.
So, I want to get back, if I may.
No, assisting a little bit.
Okay.
To say that there, that's what I was saying, there wasn't anything on economics.
It doesn't have to, but that focuses my concern. Why are you interpreting grounds to mean facts testified to as opposed to underlying basis for the decision, the grounds of the decision?
Perhaps I narrowed it too much. It was the facts to support the reasoning or the underlying basis for the decision. I think a proper synonym for grounds is exercise of discretion.
Why isn't a proper synonym for grounds basis of the decision?
On what grounds do you challenge this, Mr. Smith? Well, the grounds, the basis for my challenge is that it doesn't meet the hardship requirement because this is purely economic. Why am I wrong with that?
I don't think you are, Your Honor. I don't think it's sufficient, but it's certainly stated. I mean, the grounds are stated. I don't think it makes the sufficiency of the grounds to support the decision. That's the issue.
The statute we're looking at is sub 9. It says the grounds of something such every such determination shall be stated. And you don't have to do it in writing.
It has been interpreted, perhaps, by the city of Milwaukee itself in its own ordinance.
I don't mind being wrong. I just want to know what authority you are using to define grounds to be different than mine. Because there may be authority, but I just don't know it, and I just need help in that way.
I am not aware of a case from the state of Wisconsin that specifically interpreted that language. Although the series of cases interpreting the requirements for boards of zoning appeals as to what the responsibilities are, it's more of a general discretionary determination responsibility, but it's never been directly tied into the language the grounds shall be stated. Certainly, the ordinance which governs the Board of Zoning Appeals contemplates something more than a general conclusory statement to support the decision denying a variance. The ordinance itself provides that the board may designate one of its members who shall be licensed to practice law in the state of Wisconsin as its administrative officer to perform administrative functions pursuant to the directions of the board and to draft decisions, findings, and orders for consideration by the board. In its requirement for providing findings on a variance request, the ordinance requires that no variance shall be granted unless the board, after due notice to the parties of the interest, finds that the following facts and conditions exist, and so indicates in the minutes of the proceedings of its decision. It appears that the board is arguing today that, take that literally, that's all they need to do. That they hear the testimony, they look at the five criteria, and they can arrive at a conclusion that the five criteria have not been met, and therefore the variance is denied. I believe that the Court of Appeals is correct in saying that a review of such a determination, in effect, is illusory. There is nothing to review. If the court is thereafter, reviewing court is thereafter required to look at the application in total itself, I respectfully submit what it is doing, therefore, is thereafter conducting a de novo review of the entire matter and not just a review under the reasonableness test of the board itself. How can this court or any court determine the reasonableness of a Board of Zoning Appeals decision unless the reasons are stated with sufficient clarity with due reference to the facts disclosing the exercise of discretion to sustain the decision?
Mr. Whitcomb?
Yes, Your Honor.
What kind of decision do you want this court to write? Now, this was a per curiam in the Court of Appeals. It's quite short. It relies on some zoning cases, but also relies on other administrative agency cases. And there, I think, would be governed by 227, which this case is not. And so I always worry about mixing 227 cases and non-227 cases. So what kind of opinion, other than you're winning, what kind of opinion should this court write so that we clarify for the various zoning boards, of which there are loads around the state, as to what they should do, right? I mean, that's one of the problems the League of Municipality has. It says, boy, you got, this is a semi-professional board in the city of Milwaukee with a lawyer, but most of your boards are volunteers, not that much business, no counsel. What kind of opinion do we write?
I think the court wrote it in Zerubbabel, if I pronounced it correctly. I mean, it framed the question to be addressed by boards of adjustment or boards of zoning appeals in zoning matters.
I know, but this case doesn't involve the substance of how do you grant a variance. It involves the procedure and what the zoning board has to do.
Explain your rationale so upon judicial review, a court can make a determination as to whether your decision was reasonable.
All right. When you say that, is it enough to have a transcript where the evidence is presented to the board and then each member of the board says, I vote for the variance, or I vote against it. I vote for it because there's economic hardship. I vote against it because it's an unreasonable request. The other guy says, I vote for it because I like billboards and it's no skin off my teeth or anyone else's to do such and such. You keep going on and then you get to the five or whatever number of people there are, and you get four people ultimately saying aye and two people saying no or whatever. That's it. Chair then says what the result is. Is that going to be adequate?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, do you want them to write a written opinion like this court writes? We decide to grant the variance for the following reasons. Dear Vogel says, we think this falls under XYZ, and therefore we're granting the variance. Dissenting opinion written by two other people saying, this doesn't fall under Zero Vogel. Is that what you expect from the zoning board?
No, Your Honor, I don't think this is a...
Okay, what do you expect?
That board members pro or con on the variance request, the variance application before them, explicitly, basically explain the reasoning behind either granting or denying the variance, and in the Milwaukee situation, applying the five criteria to the reasoning. Showing the reasoning by applying the facts presented to the board.
In the first example I gave you, each person did it separately.
If they articulate it, that's fine.
Even if they articulate four different reasons.
Good. I mean, for example, if the decision in this case was strictly a debate that we are not going to grant a variance in this case because it's solely economic. That's it. And there's testimony in the record which would indicate that it was or was not, that was debatable. I believe that the evidence, I as a board member believe, based upon the evidence, that the only reason they're requesting this variance is for economic reasons. Because if the sign can be seen continually or above the trees for the next 10 years, they will be able to generate more revenue, whereas as they testified to, being blocked by the trees won't generate any revenue at all. That decision is subject to meaningful judicial review. However, without the underpinning analysis, the mental process, I think it was best described as a rational mental process by which the facts of record and the law replied on are stated and considered together for the purpose of achieving a reasonable and reasoned decision. That's all the requirement is. It's just the exercise of discretion. I certainly believe that the Court of Appeals, in deferring to a Board of Zoning Appeals, as long as its decision meets the reasonable test, may very well have affirmed the denial in this case had the record, had the reasoning of the board been sufficiently stated, articulated, put upon the record to support that decision. But they had no material as a judicial body by which to judge. If it is merely, I like it, I don't like it, judicial review becomes illusory. There is nothing to review. There's nothing to compare and contrast.
Could I ask you, I This is sort of an awkward question, but now I'm reading from Chairman Zetley. I will vote against the variance for the increased height restrictions. I believe that the criteria for hardship has not been met. Now, how would you have done it if you were Chairman Zetley?
I don't know, based upon the facts in this case, you can arrive at that conclusion. I would say that the hardship had not been met because I don't believe that whether the sign can be seen or not seen has any bearing on whether they're entitled to a variance. I believe there's still a possibility that they can convince the Department of Transportation to cut down the trees. I believe that, the sign's been there since 1982 and will continue to be there until the expiration of the lease in 2025, regardless of whether we grant this variance or not, just some rationale.
But if I can follow up on Justice Prosser's question, isn't a rationale stated? I mean, if you continue, and I think he's on page, appendix page 119, I believe the exceptional circumstances have not been met. I believe that this is an economic issue. I agree with Henry, and I believe that there is other purposes for this land. It hasn't been shown that there isn't another purpose for the land. And I have problems with his third rationale, but isn't he giving reasons why he's disagreeing with the majority of the board here?
Well, he's confusing the criteria for a variance. Exceptional circumstances has nothing to do with the standard of hardship. Exceptional circumstances is the uniqueness test applicable to variances. It doesn't have anything to hardship. The hardship question is customarily relates specifically as to whether or not it's self-imposed or whether an area variance situation, it's unduly burdensome to comply with the literal requirements of an area restriction than it otherwise would be, and that's the old Schneider test, which was reaffirmed in Zirgabel.
Well, maybe I'm missing something, but then shouldn't your position be that the wrong reasons were given as opposed to no reasons were given? I mean, the whole thrust of your argument is that reasons weren't given here for the decision. There are reasons, and I would concur at least with that last reason. I'm wondering how that really fits in when he's talking about he doesn't like bigger and bigger signs. But that's not to say that the least two of the members weren't giving reasons for why they did what they did.
I knew supporting the decision of the Court of Appeals. We argued on the appeal of the Court of Appeals exactly what you articulated, Judge, that there were not reasons or evidence in the record to sustain the decision that they reached. The Court of Appeals said, well, we don't see the rationale behind the decision. We don't see the exercise in discretion. So maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. There's nothing for us particularly to review in a meaningful way. They were sending it back to board. So please explain more fully how you arrived at the decision you did, and we'll take a look at it again.
Counselor, aren't what you're really telling us, if we go behind the argument, is that if the grounds are grounds as defined by Justice Bradley, that there are no facts to support those grounds, so therefore the board must have exercised its will rather than its judgment on facts that were before it?
Perfectly stated, yes, Your Honor.
And then the criteria for a certiorari review, and as I understand it, that's what you argued at the Court of Appeals, correct?
Correct.
And you're not giving up on that argument?
Oh, no, no, I don't.
What did the proponents of the sign testify to at the hearing, why they wanted the sign? Or what was going on?
Practically speaking, the State Department of Transportation, when they reconfigured the freeway, basically across the street from the courthouse parking lot, the county parking lot, but in Milwaukee County, they planted trees along the freeway in order for a sound buffer for freeway traffic.
Yeah.
Those trees grew to such an extent.
They obscured the vision. I must be missing something. The trees grow tall. You can't see the sign. In order for the sign to have any meaning and be economically viable, otherwise it might as well be cut down, it's got to be high enough to be seen. If it's high enough to be seen, people will rent it. Rent the sign. Who's going to rent the sign that can't be seen? So it deals with economics. And there may not have been facts. You might not have had Mr. Smith say, Mr. Smith, state your name, Mr. Smith. Why do you want the sign? I want the sign because it will be economically advantageous for me. You might not have that in the testimony, but why do you need that? I mean, I'm missing something here, because I've got Chairman Zetley saying it's a hardship, and but they don't meet the criteria. You have not only on page 19, you have it on page 17. If they can't have revenue on the sign, that's a revenue issue. That doesn't meet the height hardship criteria. And then the language in 19. And what is it that you want more than it's in here? Do you want, as Justice Rosenfeld asserted, some specific facts and evidence that have to be pointed to upon which the conclusion is based? Is that what you want articulated someplace?
Yes, the reasoning. And this whole, I don't know if this is the appropriate case for it, the whole issue of solely of economic import, that's Milwaukee's law. That's not state law. That's not contained in the statute. On a proper case, I have not had it yet. On behalf of a client, I would argue that that cannot be used as a basis for denying a variance because nowhere provided in the law is the economic of the economics of the request considered. But that notwithstanding, I think a reviewing court having what Mr. Winkler said, he said, well, wait a minute. Yeah, I see two components in a private outdoor advertising sign. One is to generate revenue, and one is to advertise. The impact is not solely economic under Milwaukee standards, because the impact affects its visibility. You can tie the two in together, but so too could you on any development of property. It has an economic impact. You can have the occlusion that, because any improvement in property, you could argue, or you're making it to improve the value, to generate more revenues, would have an economic impact, and they conclude that it's solely for economic purposes.
Therefore, you would never get a sign variance?
Well, in the discretion of the board by saying it's solely economic. And in the city of Milwaukee, that's sort of the number one, I don't want to generalize, but that's used quite often to deny variances without getting into an analysis of the other criteria. And the statute provides that boards of zoning appeals are authorized upon appeal in specific cases such variance from the terms of the ordinance as will not be contrary to public interest, we have that in the city code, where or owing to special conditions, the exceptional circumstances provision in the Milwaukee code, a literal enforcement of the provisions of the ordinance will not result in practical difficulty or unnecessary hardship. That's the state standard. Or that the spirit of the ordinance shall be preserved, public safety and welfare secured, and substantial justice be done. All provisions are set forth in the Milwaukee's ordinance, but they added that one, that variances shall not be granted if they're based solely on economic grounds. But I don't respectfully submit that this is a case for it. Perhaps if we go through the process again and it's back before the Court of Appeals on the merits, not on the absence of the exercise of discretion, that would become an issue.
So the only issue before us is how is procedural, in quotes, namely, how does the board make its decision and put it down and state it in such a way that satisfies the statute and the opinion of the Court of Appeals? So we don't have to look at Zerogo, we don't have to look at Kenosha, we don't have to look at Outagamie. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor. Or the court can say, no, there was enough. They agreed with the Board of Zoning Appeals. The Court of Appeals did not have the authority under common law by statute to remand it back to the Board of Zoning Appeals to exercise its discretion. Therefore, as in other situations where discretion is not exercised, you authorize the Court of Appeals to be able to conduct a de novo review on the application on the merits. And then we'll rebrief the merits of the particular application before the Court of Appeals, and then they can decide it basically ab initio, de novo.
Well, if we should hold against you, is that what has to happen? It has to go back to the Court of Appeals on the merits, substantive merits?
Or do we just say you lose?
No, I believe it would have to be remanded back to Court of Appeals because they didn't address the merits of the particular application, which was one of the issues brought before them, but they said that they did not have enough information from the Board of Zoning Appeals upon which to conduct a review. So basically remanded it for a further explanation of their decision so they then could consider the merits of the denial of the variance on the merits.
Basically, we took the case for the reasons stated by the Chief Justice. He said, you know, we're looking, if the court took it, it was whether or not there was a sufficient rationale here that the Court of Appeals, in exercising its discretion or its judgment, decided, no, we're going to send it back so they can explain the reasons why they arrived at the decision.
That is correct. I would submit that perhaps the petition was improvidently granted. I think that this court initially held its decision in abeyance pending the decisions of those three cases which reinstated the Snyder standard for granting variances. And then afterwards, I thought that the court, after those decisions came down, I thought that this court would indeed do that.
This case has been pending for a fair amount of time. And
did a substantial detriment of my client.
It's here on a, quote, procedural posture with the substance not yet debated. And if I understand your argument, at least part of it, when it goes back, you have a challenge to the ordinance, which has some factors that aren't in the statute. Therefore, the validity of the ordinance may be in question.
If the debate devolves to the issue of solely economic reasons.
And two, Zierwogel is the law now.
That's correct.
And you think it should be applied to you, I assume, rather than...
Yes. That was the standard that we argued before the Court of Appeals.
But not before the Board of Zoning Appeals.
I'm really not certain what standard they apply.
Zierwogel must be after that.
Correct.
So why shouldn't this all go back to the Zoning Board and have them look at the whole thing?
This court did that once before. And if memory serves, it's State S. X. Rel. Rothenberg. And I have the case at the office, and I can send it to the court, but there's one instance that didn't arise in this case where the Supreme Court did remand it to the Board of Zoning Appeals for I'm not certain if it was further analysis or further evidence.
Okay, well, we can look that up. That's fine. Thank you, counsel.
I think that site is 89 West 2nd, 463.
See? Instant citation.
Faster than the Internet.
Faster than the Internet, right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Chief Justice, members of the court.
Mr. McCamell? So why should we continue stirring this pot on the process when we still have all this substantive stuff to go?
Well, Your Honor, the reason is that the procedural question you've identified is of huge importance, not only to Milwaukee, but to every other zoning authority, and that is what kind of written decision, if at all, is required, particularly when, number one, the statute doesn't require it, and number two, the practice of many boards is not to issue them at all. If you...
Counsel, I don't... Now, I'm not sure that we would want a written decision. Now, that's perhaps preferred, and we understand the statute doesn't require one. But I'd like you to address whether or not this court should not send the case back with some direction to provide some reasoning as to the conclusions that were come to. I don't think I don't have any real posture one way or the other, but to show what they did and what was in the record. And as I say, the record seems to be somewhat deficient as far as what was being discussed. We have to guess that, well, the standard they were using was different. What about just having it go back to the board?
I would reiterate something I'd said earlier, Your Honor, and that is that wouldn't address the question that brought us here. Now, I believe that the record is sufficient, that sufficient reasons were given, and that the low threshold that is applicable here has been amply surmounted. Obviously, you can always do more and better when you're talking about rationale. I remember when I was a state hearing examiner, we used to turn out these long, beautiful decisions with findings, conclusions, and a memorandum decision. Could have been an audition to the U.S. Supreme Court. That's not required here. Nothing even close is required. The other thing is that if you are inclined to send this matter back to the board, we believe that the only proper grounds to do so would be because the standard for granting dimensional variances has changed since the board rendered its original decision. The board rendered its original decision on the no reasonable use standard of Kenosha County, as it had to do. That was the prevailing law at the time. We believe that under that standard, what it did was perfectly proper and appropriate. The problem here is with the Court of Appeals' chosen remedy, and if the last page of the Court of Appeals' summary reversal, page 4, is consulted, you'll note that it refers to the written decision and the structure of that written decision, and it says the written decision is deficient. It was looking for an explicitly reasoned written decision because it didn't discuss the record, didn't even look at the record based on what we could tell. And that's not a proper method of conducting certiorari review. This is what troubles this board. I believe it's what troubles the league. The imposition of a standard of an explicitly reasoned written decision that's outside the parameters of certiorari, and that would be tremendously burdensome, not only to the Milwaukee board, in part because of the volume of cases that's faced by that board, but also to every other board throughout the state which don't have sufficient time or legal resources to fulfill that mandate.
Counsel, I don't see on page 4, perhaps I'm missing it, the word written appearing.
If you look at how the court addressed it, it talked about findings that recite the ordinance criteria but don't recite reasons, and that come out with a conclusion that the variance is to be denied.
I know, but I read that as not necessarily having to be in writing. The bottom line, literally, is in the opinion that they have to provide an explicitly reasoned decision on Lamar's application. And I read that to be that it could be a decision, an oral decision on the record, you know, that's transcribed.
We read it in context to refer to the written decision because the entire preceding discussion referred to the structure of that written decision, and because it's the remainder of its decision made no reference whatsoever to any of the discussion on the transcript that we believe satisfied the certiorari criteria as well as the applicable standard for the exercise of discretion.
Let me ask, if the court, a reviewing court, thinks that courts are of the opinion that it cannot provide meaningful review on the record, does the reviewing court have authority to remand to ask for the record to be further explained?
That's not been done in certiorari cases, at least the ones I've reviewed. They can reverse. They can state that the decision was not supported by evidence in the record. They can use the traditional prongs, or they can demand for the taking of additional evidence.
The reason I knew that Rutherford citation, it was that it was set forth in that Torres case, that very case that I started discussing when I came out here, written by Justice Steinmetz in the late 70s. I don't know.
Yeah, that was a case that was not cited in any of the briefs. And as I recall, every zoning case I looked at, there was none that, in which a court of appeals resorted to this type of remedy. In fact, there were cases where there was no explanation at all where they affirmed based on the totality of evidence in the record. That was Old Tuckaway and some others.
There are trees that obscure, to some extent, the billboard. Is that right?
Yes. What happened was the billboard is located alongside I-43, just north of the courthouse annex. You know, the rail wall that everybody's talking about tearing down? And the billboard is currently 34 feet high. The maximum established by the then applicable sign ordinance, I have to check the new code to see what the maximum is now, is 40 feet. Lamar saw a 20-foot increase in the maximum, and they wanted to increase the height of the sign to 54 feet. Presumably a 14-foot increase would have been sufficient, but that wasn't the issue here. Because the trees had grown, and because the State Department of Transportation had their own internal schedule for trimming trees, the trees grew to the point that, at least according to what I saw on the record, I wasn't present at that hearing, the view of the billboard from the freeway was obscured, not from other directions, but at least from the freeway. And that's why they wanted it raised.
I'm sorry, Mr. McMahon, if I could just get clarification on that. The 54 feet, is that from the street level, or is the 54 feet from the freeway level?
No, from the street level. There's actually a definition of sign height in both the old and the new code.
The tree's going to continue to grow?
Presumably, unless they've been trimmed. And obviously, that would affect the economic optimality of the sign. Member Winkler, in fact, stated that explicitly on the record as the basis for supporting a finding of hardship. He said that what else can you do with a sign except see it? Well, you can also see it from different directions, but that's a matter of fact that isn't before the court right now. But, you know, upon reviewing this record after the conclusion of the board hearings, certainly understood the basis of Lamar's application and the reasons why it so fervently wants it. The question is whether it's entitled to it. We claim no, and that sufficient reasons have been articulated to demonstrate that it's not entitled to it as a matter of law, not entitled to the variance it seeks.
But given the fact that trees continue to grow,
unless they've been trimmed in the interim,
why wouldn't those reasons given by the two members of the zoning board always be sufficient to say no? I mean, isn't there almost an invitation to? Is there a taking principle here? I mean, isn't it basically rendering the sign useless?
Not necessarily, Your Honor, because the sign can be viewed from other angles and other sides, just not from the freeway, given the angle of view from the freeway through the trees to the sign. But there's no entitlement to continually raising signs higher and higher and higher because trees are growing, number one. Number two, it's interesting that the issue of taking might be a function of this. There are actually worse and out-of-state cases that were cited in my brief to the Court of Appeals in which two courts, one I believe in Georgia and one in Tennessee, had that very same situation and found that there wasn't a taking. Obviously, the sign can still remain on the property at a certain height. It won't produce all the revenue that Lamar wants, but is it entitled to the highest and best economic value from its land and from its sign lease? That's an open question, and I think that's a very different one from the question of whether, as a matter of law, they are entitled to a variance, a dimensional variance for that reason, or in the event that it sought compensation for a whole or partial taking, it would be entitled to an award on that basis. But overall, again, these go to the merits of the case and not to the form of remedy that the Court of Appeals has issued, which is really why we're here today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel, and it was a good audition for the United States Supreme Court. And thank you, Mr. Whitcomb. And as you know, the United States Supreme Court has had a number of billboard cases. That concludes our hearing on 01-3105, Lamar Central Outdoor versus Board of Zoning Appeals. The court is in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:45. The court will meet promptly in the conference room at 4:15.